Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hello and welcome to the program on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Thank you for joining us. My name is Sean McCauley. This is Agency of the Month, and in September we're going to be focusing on the Department of the Navy. Today I'm joined by Mr. Nick Gurdon. He's the Director for Transformation in the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. Mr. Gurdon, thank you very much for joining me today. This is an easy question for you, but for the uninitiated, it's a pretty important one. Why don't we just start with the basics? What is open systems architecture and how does it work?
So open system architecture is a way of using the government's ability to manage its portfolio in a more effective way, get better competition, better access to innovation, drive down costs, and increase capability. We talk about open system architecture as having both a business side and a technical side. And the challenges we face has a lot to do with the current makeup of our portfolio. We have a lot of systems that we've been acquiring for years that we haven't had a chance to use competitive practices. Our technology is continuously evolving from the benefits of the investments done on the commercial side, and some of our programs struggle with how do they take advantage of that in the programs that they present to the warfighter for the capability that our nation needs. So we look at our practices for open architecture, using modularity, using different products from across the enterprise. The Navy is an enterprise made up of things like surface Navy, submarine Navy, air Navy. And we have a challenge before us to make better use of our portfolio and reusing capabilities across these different subsets of the Navy in a more effective and affordable way. And we also want to look at how we sustain capability over the life cycle, especially taking advantage of the resources available to us from the commercial market, and driving down development costs through things like greater transparency in design, sharing of information across multiple vendors, and using competition more effectively.
Now, I have a nifty little checklist here for program managers across the Navy to use in order to implement open systems architecture with their own acquisition projects. And it says that OSA is composed of five fundamental principles, and I'm not going to repeat them because you've already outlined them for us, but I do want to dive into some of them in depth a little bit. And the first one is modular designs based on standards. When I look at that, it makes me think of the littoral combat ship, where the ship itself acts as a foundation, in this case would be an acquisition project, and then you can add different components to that ship in order to let it fulfill different missions. That could be anti-aircraft, that could be anti-submarine, that could be anti-surface. Is that a fair analogy? Is that what open systems architecture is going for with acquisition projects?
Yeah, the littoral combat ship is a very powerful example of using modularity to position the Navy to be able to deploy different kinds of capabilities in the future, making an investment in a platform. Yeah, the littoral combat ship itself is going to be around for a long time, where we might be able to change the types of missions that platform does much more affordably by changing out the mission module instead of having to change the ship in a much more effective and invasive and expensive way.
So how does this translate into the nuts and bolts of the open systems architecture concept? I know you work a lot with technical systems. Is this all-inclusive?
Technical and business. So the business side of what Littoral Combat Ship has done, as an example, is the mission modules are actually being procured through three different Navy field activities. The ships themselves are being procured through two different contractors, but because they have well-defined interfaces, they can bring different capabilities in and out, and even across different constructors of ships, you know, the Freedom class and the Independence class as examples, then we have a lot of ability to use our buying power through competition, through modularity, through changing the nature of what the missions of the ships can do more affordably than in previous ship classes.
So what's important here are two different concepts. One, I would guess, is defining the requirements of what the mission needs to accomplish, and then two, fostering the competition with the industry in order to find the lowest cost in order to meet that mission. Is that a fair assessment?
lowest cost and greatest capability for the dollars we have. I'm a big fan of looking for the best deal, which might not necessarily mean the less lower cost, but I am certainly a big fan of using competition to get the lowest possible cost for the greatest amount of capability for the money we have, or driving down the cost if the capability we need is fixed. What we were just talking about reminded me of another example of how we can use open architecture in a more kind of more granular way. So the Littoral Combat Ship's a kind of a big module construct. But if you look inside each one of those modules, we've got displays, and we've got sensors, and we've got offboard vehicles, and the government can then use those as components of those major modules, and then use competitive practices to get a better deal or a better price or a better performance through using competition.
Now, I want to move into the next fundamental principle that caught my eye, and that's enterprise investment strategies, reusing proven hardware system designs and ensuring we spend the least to get the best. So with the example you gave of displays for the ship, does that mean you can just create technologies for one ship and then just take it over and then reappropriate it to work on another ship?
Yeah, for example, we have different kinds of mission systems that we put on, say, this kind of an aircraft or that kind of a submarine. It turns out there's a lot of common warfighting capability across these different platform instantiations, if you will, that kind of a system on this kind of a submarine, that kind of a system on this kind of aircraft. Turns out they do a lot of the same functions. So what we want to do is work on collaboration across the Navy enterprise and see where can we make a better use of our portfolio and balance out these potentially duplicative efforts and get an overall better deal for our systems. If its original intent was in one place, but we want to use it somewhere else, you might have to add a little bit of extra stuff to it to make it work in the different context. And that's when the technical practice of open architecture really shine, because we have well-defined interfaces, you have information that can be made to available to other people so that you can understand what it takes to translate that capability into a different arena. Now, Navy leadership has been pretty strong about some of these practices. For instance, about a year ago, our senior admiral, the chief of naval operations, wrote a little thought piece in the Naval Institute Proceedings called Payloads and Platforms. And what we're seeing is people thinking seriously about how would we get at a top-level strategy our warfighting ships to take advantage of kind of the next level in the discussion about modularity from the Littoral Combat Ship into future combat ships to increase the flexibility of our buying practices and be able to put in capabilities more affordably and change them more effectively over the life cycle. Ships are built to last a long time, 30, 40, and for an aircraft carrier, maybe even 50 years. And the commercial market for software systems, computer hardware, is changing out very quickly compared to the life cycle of a ship. So we want to move toward an environment where we can change those systems out more effectively and affordably as more of a life cycle continuum instead of things that are done on major episodic, giant life cycle refreshes over the course of the life of the ship. So instead of, one big change in the middle of a ship's life, more look at little changes that can be done more flexibly.
I'm speaking with Mr. Nick Gurdon. He's Director for Transformation at the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy. I'm Sean McCauley, and you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to the program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and FederalNewsRadio.com. Thanks for joining us on Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy. My name is Sean McCauley, and today I'm speaking with Mr. Nick Gurdon. He's Director for Transformation at the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. Earlier we spoke a little bit about the fundamental principles of open systems architecture. I'd like to transition and ask you about what the industry side feels about OSA. How are they receiving it? How's that partnership going?
Yeah, so the contractors we work with, especially in defense, are very good at doing what's in our contracts. So some of it comes back to the government. How do we put into our contracts what we want them to do? And that's where the Open Architecture Contract Guidebook for Program Managers comes into play, because that's where we pull together a consistency in contract language so that we can get a more consistent behavior when it comes to what we're looking for industry to do. Now, when it comes to actually talking with industry members, we've actually got a fairly robust conversation going through things like the Future Airborne Capability Environment Consortium. That's a standard that's being developed by the Open Group, and it's got, I think, about 60 different industry members, and they're collaborating together to build a open technical reference framework that lots of different people could build components on, and you could use them to compose a flight control system for a UAV, for example, or a bunch of other kind of stuff. That's an example of industry getting together and helping us define an open technical framework that we could use across multiple systems, multiple platforms. In my context, platforms mean this kind of a ship, that kind of an airplane. And then we could get into the business of buying the applications that run on it more affordably because the foundation is consistent.
So communication in that case is really important for contractors. And actually, last time that you were on Federal News Radio, you spoke with my colleague Francis Rose, and you brought in the guidebook for program managers of the Navy. And you mentioned that the OSA office is going to be making some changes to it. What's going on there? How is that going?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so we just came out with a new version in June, and very excited about it because if you go onto the website to look at the contract guidebook, you'll see that one of the first things you'll see is a cover note from the Navy's, the Department of Defense acquisition executive, Mr. Frank Kendall, saying that, hey, the contract guidebook has got a lot of material that is useful to program managers, and he directs that everyone in the acquisition workforce become familiar with the context of the guidebook and use it to the effect that they can. So having that kind of senior leadership top cover that says, this is material that is useful to you, you should take advantage of it every place you can, really helps people understand that this is something that they could take to the bank, put into their contracts, and get benefit out of.
So that right there tells me that open systems architecture is sort of paving the way for the Navy to help make sure they're following the better buying initiative that Undersecretary Kendall is laying out. Are there any other ways that the OA office is taking a lead in making sure that the rest of the Department of the Navy is following the better buying power initiatives? I mean, we're up on to better buying power 2.0 at this point.
Yeah, so the another thing that we had a hand in is, in fact, we're in the middle of developing is something called an intellectual property strategy guide. In the not too distant future, programs will need to create something called an intellectual property strategy. And what we're really helping people to think through is what are the government's ability to share information to level the competitive playing field and get a better deal? But then also, where is it prudent for the government to say, hey, industry, you made an internal investment, and we honor that. We want you to invest and make money in places where we get the best possible capability for the lowest possible price. But we want to make sure that we can replace those things competitively as well. Live by the sword, die by the sword. So we honor intellectual property when industry does its own investment. However, when the government pays for capability development, that's the taxpayers' investment, and we need to make sure we government people, as our fiduciary responsibility, is to make sure we can take advantage of that information and share it with others for the purposes of getting a better deal, especially through competition.
And that definitely goes back to some of the fundamental principles of the open systems architecture, which is communication and collaboration, both from an industry side and from the Navy. We're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about something else you mentioned when you were last on Federal News Radio. It's called Mowgli. It's not from the Jungle Book or anything like that, but we'll be right back. I'm speaking with Mr. Nick Girton. He is the Director for Transformation in the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. This is Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to the program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley. Today I'm speaking with Mr. Nick Girton. He's the Director for Transformation at the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. And throughout the show, we've talked a lot about open systems architecture, a modular, transparent way for the Navy to do acquisition projects, components of any project, whether that be hardware, software, or even business practices themselves, can be transferred to other projects throughout the Navy and saves development costs down the line and reduces duplication. Now, when we last left off, we were talking about a system called Mowgli. And that's not from the Jungle Book. That's something very specific to the OSA office, and it's helping them drive down costs. And Mr. Girton, this is something you mentioned last time that you were on Federal News Radio, and I'd like to know a little bit more about it. What is Mowgli, and how does it work?
So Mowgli is an acronym. It stands for Massive Multiplayer Online War Game Leveraging the Internet. And all of those words are important in one way or another. The first thing is that it's a crowdsourcing utility built by the Naval Force Graduate School, using wargaming methods. So you lay down ideas, you play alternatives against it, you come up with innovations by using multiple people thinking about the problem together. Then that's where the crowdsourcing part comes in, and that's why it's important to leverage the Internet. So the Navy has something called the Business Innovation Initiative. We're just finishing up the first year. We were looking for candidate ideas from academia, government, industry, that we could use to inform a set of activities this coming fiscal year to define changes in policy, changes in technical practices, changes in business practices, and perhaps even maybe alternative candidate legislation that we would propose to Congress. So the Business Innovation Initiative was trying to find a way to get a broad array of viewpoints of innovative ideas from as many people as from many different perspectives as we could, and we used this Mowgli facility as the mechanism. It was especially beneficial to get both small business and major DoD businesses perspectives involved, because you know, we can't be successful without them, and we need their ideas in order to make sure we can put in new practices and new policies that will be effective and mutually beneficial. So we used we did a big campaign to get as many people involved as possible. Certainly, an interview on Federal News Radio was very helpful for that. And we got hundreds of participants, and we got well over a thousand different idea cards. And those different the way it works is it's kind of like a card game. We set out a handful of seed cards, cards that just start the incubatorial process of ideating on a concept. And we lay down those idea cards, and they're fairly short. Actually, the system restricts each played card to 140 characters, kind of like a Twitter thing. And each card then gets played on by one of the players. It comes in and they can add or challenge or build upon the different ideas that they're looking at. And each person subsequently can look at the next tier of ideas, and they can challenge that or add to it or innovate on it. And so the discussion flows out. It really explodes into all these different ideas. And as the different ideas generate really novel concepts, then we had a set of people called game masters that would look over the top of the game and see these different really fruitful incubations of ideas come out, and say, and they would pull some of those ideas aside and say, wow, that's a super interesting idea. That's actually one of the names of the activities in the game, a super interesting idea. And say, hey, you guys, write me a little plan. And the plan has a very defined format, you know, who's involved, what do you have to do, what's required, and flesh out this action plan that more fully evolves this idea that you're banking on. So, yes, we've got a lot of different idea cards, I think slightly less than 2,000, but more interestingly, the idea cards burst these action plans. We've got about 15 of those that were the major artifact out of gameplay that helps us understand what it is the crowd thought we should do to get better business in how the Navy pursues warfighting system excellence.
I'm just trying to imagine how attitudes would change when you look at business strategy invention in a game format. I mean, I would be sitting there with a huge smile on my face going, oh, man, super cool idea. I got tons of those.
Well, we did get a whole bunch of great ideas, in fact. But one of the other things that the Naval Postgraduate School did a masterful job of was managing a level of privacy about identity, so that you have a fictitious name that you make for yourself, a little avatar that says, and you make up a name, and that's who you are in the game. The fact that you're from, you know, this big business or this small business or this academic institution or this government agency, it has absolutely no bearing on the value of your ideas. And people look at your ideas and they comment on them completely independent of what organization they come from or what their company's cultural perspective is. So they're just free to have good ideas. And as it turns out, we got a lot of great ideas out of running that game.
Now, as these ideas flow in, how does it change the way you look at change management in and of itself?
So I've been in this open architecture business in the Navy now for a while, and the idea of using the crowd to come up with ideas is very new, at least to me, and how to use it to help find great ideas is fairly clear. I mean, you get great ideas out of using these things. It does require a fair amount of upfront effort to frame the game. We would have separate meetings with about 20 different individuals from academia and different government agencies to think about what are the seed cards, how do you run the game, what are the different new ideas we want people to think about as the game unfolds. So coming up with the game construct required a little upfront time. Running the game itself, you pretty much have to put your day job on hold for, a week. Well, at least if you're a game master, you really need to keep an eye on it. I had a couple of guys who dedicated themselves to being good game masters and keep an eye on how all the ideas were baking out. But then, now all of you got these great action plans and a whole bunch of different individual ideas to cull through and pull out some more valuable meaning from. Now, what do you do with all of that? So the next step is to validate the different ideas that come out. Now, it may very well be that some of the bright ideas that came out of the action plans just might not be implementable for whatever reason it might be. So it might not pass the validation crucible. But assuming it does, and most of them did, by the way, then you need to think about, well, how do I actually implement that? So that's what we're going to be doing in the next fiscal year, figuring out how to implement the different great ideas that came out of this year's activity, especially the crowdsourcing game that we ran back in July.
Now, I would assume as you look forward, the specter of sequestration, the possible extension into fiscal 2014, maybe a continuing resolution, who knows, we'll find out. That has to weigh on your mind as you look forward. And what ways is it affecting your planning? Is it just an uncertainty and you're just going to go full steam ahead and see what happens, or are you already putting in counteractive measures?
Oh, well, I'm a servant of the public, so whatever my leadership tells me to go do, that's what I'll go do. So I'm not going to really comment on sequestration, except to say that we're generating value for reducing the cost and increasing innovation opportunities, especially in the Navy, but also we see these ideas through the Better Buying Power Initiative to the other services. So I'm reasonably confident that we're going to be given the top cover we need to go pursue these concepts, because we're adding the ability to get a better deal for the dollars we have.
So I'm going to take this moment to clarify that for today, at least, you are the interviewee master, and I really appreciate your time. One last thing I want to talk about is something I noticed in your bio. It says that at one point you were serving on a submarine, and I'm wondering what that experience was like and if it in any way prepared you for the challenges that you're facing today with implementing all the initiatives and reforms of open systems architecture and doing things like this Mowgli stuff and creating the new guidebooks and everything like that.
Oh, so I was a power plant operator on submarines. I was a nuclear-trained electrician, and I was running the plant was exciting and interesting. I also was a submariner, so I had an opportunity to do some warfighting stuff, especially as the height of the Cold War up in the North Atlantic, Soviets all over the place. It was very exciting. But then I put myself through college, and while I was going to college, I joined the Navy Reserve. And as I finished my college degree, I got a commission as a engineering duty officer in the Navy Reserve, and that's where my work life and my Navy Reserve affiliation really came together, because it gave me a better connection with what was happening out in the waterfront, what was happening on the deck plates. I was a government engineer, product developer. I developed mechanical systems as well as software systems, but I never left the waterfront. I still had that connection because of my reserve affiliation. I wore very proudly my submarine insignia, but I always considered myself an overall Navy guy. And certainly what I do today is throughout the Navy enterprise, aircraft, submarine, surface. And so it's been helpful for me to have that that waterfront experience as a sailor on a ship, be able to extend that into my professional life, keep that connection and have that more depth to what does it mean to be a warfighter? What does it mean to try to make sense out of the world given these new capabilities we provide, and how do we make that more effective when it comes to doing the needs of the nation?
Nick Gurdon is Director of Transformation in the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. Sir, thank you very much for joining me today. We're going to have this entire conversation archived at federalnewsradio.com. Just search Agency of the Month. I'm Sean McCauley for Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 11:30 a.m., only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Your source for federal news now.